Hi, I am the very fantasy Magic the Gathering plane known as New York City. Kira.
Hi, I'm Pixie's favorite new counterspell, Maya.
And can you believe it's time already?
Time for what?
Spider-Man.
It's Spider-Man time?
The set is fully spoiled.
Wait, what?
It's 188 cards.
Oh my God.
And we're fully spoiled.
I'm not going to lie. When I was looking through the spoilers, I was like, oh yeah, we'll be fine. We're still like a week out or something. There'll be more cards. No, it's just the size of the set.
Mm-hmm.
Sick.
Yeah. Like my approximation is that this was meant to be an Assassin's Creed style set prior to the introduction of Universes Beyond and Standard.
Right. Okay.
And like, hence the very small nature of the set and the overwhelming representation of legendary creatures.
Yep, that makes sense.
But it's a standard set.
It is.
And so we're going to talk about cards that we've seen in the Spider-Man set that we are excited for. This is like, it's another predictions episode. We've done these for what? Aetherdrift, how many sets?
Everything since Aetherdrift, right?
Everything since Aetherdrift.
What was it? Aetherdrift and Tarkir and Final Fantasy. And
Spider-Man?
Now we're at Spider-Man? I feel like we've missed one there. Was there something between Aetherdrift and Tarkir?
Edge of Eternities.
Right, yeah, no.
I mean, if that gives you any idea as to like where that set currently is in like where people's minds are, because yeah. Like I haven't seen a booster pack for Edge of Eternities in weeks at this point. So
not since the week it released.
Edge, so it's been Aetherdrift, Tarkir, Final Fantasy,
Edge of Eternities. And now Spooderman.
Spooderman. There's lots of Spoodermans in that one.
There's so many Spoodermans
in this set.
Like Bard class just got so much better.
Sure. Okay. The commander players are very happy about it.
Yeah, of course.
But we're here to talk about standard cards. So
believe it or not, it's true.
So, Maya, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm gonna kind of group my picks because I have a couple of them.
All right.
And I'm going to group them into two broad categories.
Yep.
The first one is like lands, things that are the new lands that are interesting, that are kind of powerful. And the other one, to the surprise of maybe no one, will be pixie.card.
Just cards that go in pixie decks.
Cards that might go in pixie decks. Cards that are powerful because the new web-slinging mechanic is pretty good for a mid-rangey pixie deck, right? Mm-hmm. So there's lots of interesting stuff. So let's start there, right?
Okay.
Let's start with the fun, interesting pixie things. And let's start with what I am calling the power-crept Jataxium Probe.
Right.
We are starting with Arachne Psionic Weaver.
Okay.
They are 2 and a white mm-hmm. for a legendary creature, spider human hero. They have web slinging for 1 white. You may cast this spell for 1 white if you also return a tapped creature you control to its owner's hand. As Arachne enters, look at an opponent's hand, then choose a card type other than creature. Spells of the chosen type cost 1 more to cast, and they are a 3/3.
I mean, a 3/3 for 1, if you get to use the web slinging and then attacks on top of that does seem... Is this a mythic?
I believe it's a rare.
If it's a rare, that's insane.
It is a rare.
Oh my gosh. Lightstall Inquisitor with Arachne?
It's way better Lightstall Inquisitor.
It's a really good Lightstall Inquisitor.
It doesn't hit one card. It hits all cards of a certain type.
Of a certain type, it's but a non-creature type.
It's a 1-mana 3/3 and it rebuys one of your pixies.
Sure. I mean, notably, it's not a 1-mana 3/3 on turn 1.
No, that is true.
Right? Like, when I saw this card, I saw this in, like, the Selesnya Cage style decks.
Sure.
I was thinking you're more likely to get a 3/3 for 1 off of a Llanowar Elves, you know?
Oh, that's pretty cool, actually. Tap Llanowar Elves, cast a thing, return Llanowar Elves to your hand to cast the Arachne.
Web-slinging.
That's very cool.
The interesting thing I will say, so web-slinging very much reminds me of, again, to make the Assassin's Creed comparison, it reminds me of free-running. Like, there was a free-running cost, you could cast assassin spells or certain spells that had free-running for their free-running cost if you attacked with an assassin or a commander, like, or your commander that turn. And this feels very similar. And I'm actually really surprised that web-slinging doesn't have the prerequisite of needing to attack with the creature. It's just a tapped creature. And so things like Llanowar Elves are going to benefit really highly from that. Or just your aggressive, you know, your nurturing pixie that, you know, attacks into no flying blockers.
Yeah, your cheap evasive creatures.
Yeah. The tax on a specific card type as well could do really well. You imagine if you're playing against a VV deck, you choose instant or sorcery. Pretty good. Obviously, sometimes the momentum that the VV players generate is too great. You know, a tax of one when your VV generates, you know, five blue mana every turn may not be the be-all end-all, but it's not nothing. And you get to look at their hand as well, which is pretty good.
There was something really interesting, or I think a couple of years ago, it was said on a episode of Limited Resources, and LSV essentially said, how many games do you lose, or how many less games do you lose if you know the contents of your opponent's hand?
Oh.
Right? If you just knew what was in your opponent's hand at one stage of the game, how many less games would you lose? And the answer is so many. So the fact that you attach it to a really compelling body, like what amounts to a 1-mana 3/3 with potential upside of making things cost less, it is a tempo-oriented card, but it's also just big. It's a big old beat stick. And you can just cast this for 3 mana. It's not like the non-web-slinging side is prohibitive. There will just be turns where you're like, okay, well, I can either play this Cosmogrand Zenith and not trigger it because it's 3 mana, or I can attack and I can then just like put this Arachne in play for 3 mana and it's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like its effect is made any worse casting it for 3. It's obviously on rate fantastic to cast it for 1, but it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't feel prohibitive to have to be like, I'll just pay full price for the Arachne. It's 3 mana. Let me look at your hand and tax a creature type. A card type.
And especially given the pixie decks that exist at the moment are slightly kind of more tempo decks than they are the mid-range decks of the Orbs of Pixies of old, the 1 mana tax across specific card types can be really impactful over the course of the game. That kind of effect really can make or break, like, it's the equivalent probably of, like, 5 or 6 percentage points. It's pretty good.
All right. Well, so if that's a creature that you've got, what other cards have you got for Pixie?
I have another fun one.
Mm-hmm.
It is Spider Sense.
Yes, okay.
It is 1 and a blue for an instant, and it has web slinging for a single blue. And it says counter target instant spell, sorcery spell, or triggered ability.
I love a counter target triggered ability.
You do love a stifle.
I'm sorry. I love a Tail's End stifle. Like, I love, because I've said it before and I'll say it again, it is usually an effect you have no ability to interact with. In general, you cannot interact with triggered abilities. Love it.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I will say this is probably a sideboard card. Yes. You're probably wanting this in matchups like Vivi and Control, and you're probably not wanting this in the mono red matchup. So it's probably not starting in your main deck, but it is a really powerful and really versatile effect. Its baseline at 2 mana is also not bad, right? Normally we would expect to see on these spells with cost reductions, we would expect to see them being slightly overpriced on their non-cost reduction side, right? Mm-hmm. So you would expect a spell like this probably to be 3 mana, which is too much. But at 2 mana, and with the option for it to be a 1 mana spell that also, like, imagine a play pattern where your opponent casts a thing, you try to interact, and they cast a removal spell on your pixie. And you tap a blue, return the pixie to your hand, and counter the other spell they cast. This is a potentially really high upside card. It is worth noting that the +1/+1 counter that Agatha's Soul Cauldron gives is a triggered ability. It is a reflexive triggered ability.
Oh.
So while putting the VV under the Soul Cauldron is an activated ability, you can prevent that initial ball rolling with this counterspell, which in games where it is often the matter of one turn can be quite impactful.
Yeah. I do like that. I do like that. And again, seeing a counterspell of this type at 2 mana, you have negate, which is like counter target non-creature spell. And this is a little bit more limited in its uses, but I'm sure that's because of the design of having web slinging on it. It can't do everything. just because it has web slinging on it.
Well,
right?
It's different, right?
Like, yes.
The things that this interacts with are fundamentally different from what negate interacts with. Because right. negate, typically, you are trying to, like, what you really want to counter with a negate is a planeswalker.
I was going to say planeswalker artifact, something really esoteric. Even in, like, a big enchantment as well could be something, you know, in the world where we were casting omnisciences again. Negate.
Negate. whereas this feels much more to me, at least, like a spell pierce style card.
Yes.
Right? It is supposed to be this kind of like tempo forward, aggressive, kill the or interact with the one or two key moments where your opponent is going to stabilize and push through damage that way. And the fact that it incidentally rebuys a pixie some of the time is just pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. What's next?
What's next? Well, you chose some cards as well.
I did.
You had some interesting fun ones.
Okay.
So
remind me what I chose.
I shall, you know. And I'll start with the one that I'm most curious about okay. that you picked. And this is Hide on the Ceiling.
Okay.
It is an X and a blue for an instant. It says exile X target artifacts and or creatures. Return the exiled cards to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Yes, this was a choice for the Vivi decks because you can bounce the Agatha Soul Cauldron and the Vivi is exiled. If there's a Vivi exiled underneath it and then you bounce the Soul Cauldron back to their hand, that Vivi is gone forever.
So as a piece of interaction against specifically the Vivi Cauldron deck?
Specifically against the Vivi Cauldron deck. And now that we are, I don't know if you saw some of the most recent, like did you see the most recent Pro Tour?
No, I did not.
I might be wrong in thinking it's a Pro Tour. It was Spotlight Series Planetary Rotation. Mono Red Aggro one.
Amazing.
The metagame is now 55% Mono Red Aggro.
Really?
It's because Magic players are sometimes not creative. And they will just play the deck that wins an event. And that's what's happened. Mono Red Aggro beat Vivi Cauldron. And so everyone started playing Mono Red Aggro. And now, of course, like, oh, how the turntables. Now everyone is furious with Mono Red again. And it's feeling like the Heartfire Hero, Monstrous Rage era of frustration with Mono Red Aggro because people are now lamenting, you know, I just went and played a league, didn't say VV once, but I did play Mono Red Aggro 6 times. And so it's just this very, like, relentless cycle of deck does really well. Everyone plays that deck. Everyone bemoans how good that deck is. Someone beats that deck. Everyone plays the deck that beat it and, like, ad nauseum, you know? You could just play Esper Pixie. Yes, I understand that's what you're thinking. But it's been really interesting seeing how things have changed so much since this one event where Mono Red Aggro won, and now everyone's playing Mono Red Aggro because everyone's just playing the best deck. And there is an element, like, and we can get into this in a different episode another time. There is an element of playing the best deck is a good choice. But also,
especially if you're low on prep time.
If you're low on prep time, and we've mentioned this before, playing the, like, just net decking the best thing is a perfectly valid thing to do. But, you know, when everyone net decks the best deck, and suddenly 54% of the metagame is now the other deck, you know, and we've swinged and swunged and now we're kind of back where we started, just with a different deck at the top. So,
and I, for one, am ready to welcome our Esper Pixie Overlord.
Yeah. Take a shot every time Maya says that.
Well, maybe don't. That's a dangerous game.
But with Hide on the Ceiling, going back to the card that I picked, I also like this as a push card to blink your opponent's board for a final push of aggression. Get rid of a bunch of nasty, annoying blockers and just turn sideways. You know, if your final push is essentially tap all creatures your opponent controls, swing, face, and win, I think that's pretty reasonable. Obviously, you know, and it could go, you know, as much as I say, like, this is a great card against Cauldron, it could also go in the sideboard of a Cauldron deck that's looking to play a more aggressive post-game, like, post-board game. And it's going to go, you know what? We're just going to make everything huge, blink all of your things off of the board, like, clear your board up for a turn, and then I'm going to swing sideways and kill you. I think that's a pretty decent strategy. There also is a world in which we may see some interesting, you know, this could also be protection for your things. You can blink your own things out. And if you have any creatures that have particularly nice ETB effects, like if you have an Arachne that you blink, if you have a Lightstall Inquisitor that you blink. Now we're taxing things on the return to battlefield. So I see it as pretty like multi-purpose. I don't think it's going to be the best spell to come out of the set, but I think it has a lot of interesting utility, and the fact that it's artifacts or creatures I think is really significant with Cauldron in the format.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me. Because when I first read this, this read like a combo card.
Yeah.
It reads like double all your ETBs and you're playing it in blue-white, the blue-white artifacts deck, and you're triggering all your like Simulacrum Synthesizers and your spring-loaded saw blades.
Yeah.
And just doing all that again. But the fact that it's using it as a tempo tool is actually really interesting, especially in a deck that's generating a bunch of incidental mana for a final push like Vivi. And especially when, I mean, I kind of expect the non-Cauldron Vivi deck is about to get a lot more popular because that has a reasonably good matchup into mono red. So, damn.
I was just saying, it's like it's kind of a toolboxy spell.
Yeah.
You can play it aggressively, you can play it controlling. So
100%.
Yeah. What else did I choose?
Yeah, what's next on your clairvoyant list?
I did have a... Can you read the board white?
Yeah, absolutely. So the card we're talking about is Villainous Wrath. It is 3BB for a sorcery. Target opponent loses life equal to the number of creatures they control, then destroy all creatures.
I like this a lot.
Yeah?
I like a Rakdos Charm.
Sure.
I love a Rakdos Charm. I think more people in Commander should be playing Rakdos Charm. I think it's a really sneaky piece because it's also instant speed. I think it's a really sneaky piece, and I'm thinking of Villainous Wrath. I'm thinking of Villainous Wrath against your go wide token strategies.
Sure.
Sure. Go ahead. Make 20 tokens. That won't hurt you at all. Obviously, a lot of the times when the token player has made their 20 tokens, they are doing it to kill you on the spot. But in some of the Selesnya Cage decks, the green-white decks, they can't act that quickly. And I think it's a very interesting punishing piece of, awesome, you did your thing. You got to make a whole bunch of tokens. Lose life equal to the number of tokens, number of creatures you control, and then destroy all of them. Even if this card... If this card said either sentence on its own, if it just said, you know, 5 mana, target opponent loses life equal to the number of creatures they control, not good enough. If it just said 5 mana, destroy all creatures, not good enough. We have plenty of good board wipes that are not 5 mana and don't have, like, as severe of a pip restriction for 5 mana, right? And so, I suppose Beyond the Quiet's 3WW. But regardless, I just think this spell does 2 really interesting things and punishes a go-wide strategy. And I think that's really interesting. We haven't seen an effect like this in a while. Like, I can't recall off the top of my head any effect that's, you know, currently in standard that says, like, you know, you lose life equal to the number of creatures you control. I can only think of Rakdos Charm. And so I really like this as a board wipe in black because black does not have any good board wipes right now. And I would love to see this in a Bloodletter deck to double the amount of life they will lose. You know, play this in a mono black control style deck where you've got Unstoppable Slasher, you've got your Rush of Dreads and your Bloodletter of Akhlazots, and this is kind of like your extra push as well. Yeah, you've got, you know, 6 creatures out on the board. You're going to lose 6 life, which is actually 12.
Yeah, I mean, that seems entirely reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have to go in that sort of mono black style control deck because otherwise I think the two effects are kind of at odds with each other,
mm-hmm.
right? Because when you're playing a more controlling deck, you don't really care that much about an incidental 3 or 4 life from your opponent, right? A lot of the time, especially these days, the way control decks are killing you is River Churn Monument.
Mm-hmm.
So the additional line of, you know, that opponent loses life equal to the number of creatures doesn't quite strike me as super valuable unless you are playing the sort of kind of large controlling mid-range deck that we see out of mono black, especially with Archenemy's Charm.
Yeah, and this would strike me as a sideboard card.
Yeah.
This is a good tool of, oh, I'm playing against a token deck.
Yeah, how do you beat mono white? This card.
Yeah, I like this card. I think I like the effect of lose life equals the number of creatures you control. Yep. I'm going to punish you for your strategy of going wide.
Seems pretty good.
I like it.
All right, my turn again.
Okay.
And I mean, while we're on the topic of monoblack, I'm going to talk about Agent Venom.
Okay.
He's 2 and a black for a legendary creature, symbiote soldier hero. He has Flash and Menace. And whenever another non-token creature you control dies, you draw a card and lose 1 life. And it's a 2/3.
How many mana is it again?
2 and a black.
2 and a black is 3.
Mm-hmm.
Is Sephiroth better than this?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think you play both.
Yeah?
I think it's a 3 mana 2/3 with Flash with a bunch of upside, right? Think about this also in the, like, Raise the Past, Eliasil Core decks that are running around. There's a lot of incidental...
Eliasil Core rotated.
Yes. There is still a black-white deck. It's using Umbral Color Zealot and Welcoming Vampire. And now.
Also not in the format. Hinterland Sanctifier.
No, 1 and a black. I played against it literally today.
Welcoming Vampire is 1 and a white from Innistrad Crimson Vow.
I'm thinking 1 and a black. Vengeful Witch.
Vengeful Blood Witch.
Yes, that one. We got there eventually.
Don't try and test me on my knowledge of standard cards. Don't try and come into my house, our house. Go on.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think it's reasonable in those decks as a way to, like, generate a bunch of incidental value. I think it is good in the Sephiroth decks that are looking to sacrifice things anyway, right? Getting an additional piece of card draw beyond just, like, the repeated pings is really good, and the fact that it benefits when you transform your Sephiroth is good, too. I think this is just a good, like, thing. It has Flash. This card is really good against a board wipe. There are so many, like, good incidental use cases for this card. I don't think it's a 4-of. I think it's, like, a 2-of. But I think it is good enough to see play.
Is it better than a Ritual Chamber Unholy Annex?
I think it's very different. I think it is better than a Ritual Chamber or Unholy Annex in a Sephiroth deck, yes.
Just because I said this to... I was hanging out with none other than Ben Tundman last week. And... one of the comments that I made was, it seems as though, like, I could do a whole, like, TED talk on the idea of the 3-drop slot and how critically important the 3-drop slot is in almost any deck that you would play. And the problem that I find in standard is a lot of really good 3-drops. There's a lot of really, really good 3-drops. And so it feels as though it's even harder sometimes to accurately place everything on a ladder in terms of where, you know, what slots do you need filled? Do you need creatures, non-creatures? Like, you know, how resilient do you need to be? Do you need a permanent type that's difficult to interact with? Are we worried about board wipes? Are we worried about kill spells? Like, it feels as though, like, there is also such thing as too much of a good thing. You know, I'm not convinced on this card. I think the existence of Sephiroth already and the existence of Unholy Annex Ritual Chamber makes this, like, 50% in my mind. I'm curious, and I'm really interested because it is interesting for black to hold open 3 mana right now, because also doing nothing on your turn for 3 mana to flash in an Agent Venom doesn't seem particularly high upsided to me. Like, if the plan is surprise Agent Venom, surprise block, I don't know if that's good enough in this slot.
I don't think you care about the surprise.
Yeah.
I think this card would be just as good if it didn't have Flash.
Sure.
I think the text, whenever a non-token creature you control dies, you lose a life and draw a card, is just very strong.
Sure.
I think turning your Sephiroth into a draw 2 cards is pretty good. Turning your Umbral Collar Zealot into a draw engine is just pretty good. And again, you are right. It is not, like, 4-of mid-range deck playable. It requires the synergy base around it, but those decks exist. We see the mono-black Sephiroth deck. We see the, like, black-white Raise the Past deck. These decks exist, and I think this is likely to be a piece that exists in those decks, even if it is as a 2-of as opposed to a, you know, 4-of mainstay.
Yeah. I'm still medium on it. I hear what you're saying. I'm still medium on it. Yeah. I'd be curious to see frankly, I'm curious to see where any Spider-Man cards end up.
No, for
because,
sure.
Because I think, for the most part, Maya, I think a lot of them are pretty medium.
Yeah, but I felt that way about Final Fantasy too, and they printed Vivi.
They printed Vivi, they printed Sephiroth.
And even then, Sephiroth's not actually seeing that much play.
No. Thank God.
I don't know. I think that play pattern would be interesting.
I think it would be interesting. I think the fact that they're both three drops makes it a lot more difficult. I think if Agent Venom was even two mana, I'd be a lot more high up on it.
I think if Agent Venom was two mana, it might be one of the best cards in the format.
Well, more just like if it was two mana, didn't have Menace or Flash, and it just said whenever a non-token creature you control dies,
oh, sure.
you draw a card and lose life, I think I'd be on, way more up on it. Because I think
fair
then, because I think then the... like flash in, then play your Sephiroth on turn three. I think the fact that they're kind of both competing for that same slot makes it a little clunky.
Sure, 100%.
But we'll see. I don't know it. We'll see.
We by definition shall.
Yes.
All right.
What else have you got?
I'm actually swinging back to you.
Oh my goodness.
We have Sudden Strike.
Yes.
It is one and a white for an instant with a very, very simple line of text. Destroy target attacking or blocking creature.
Frankly, I don't think I need to explain myself. I'm going to be honest. I don't think I need to explain myself with this one.
I think you do.
2-mana instant speed removal is something that's been missing in the format. Obviously, where we usually see 2-mana instant speed removal is in black. You've got your Bitter Triumphs, your now gone Go for the Throats, your Anoint with Afflictions and all of that. I think... obviously, this being in white lends itself to a very different, like, play pattern. And the restrictions on it, of course, lend more into the ways that white tends to play. So I don't need to explain myself. I think this is a really good piece. It's a good aggressive push. It means you can, it means that attacking is legal again.
What deck are you thinking this is going to see play in? Because I'm going to be entirely transparent. I feel the way about this card that you feel about
Agent Venom.
Yeah. I think this card is stone cold unplayable.
Oh my God.
The drama.
I see it being played in cage decks.
Okay.
Because cage decks have gone in a slightly more aggressive direction.
So I guess, okay, in my mind,
sure,
the white decks that are playing instant speed 2-mana removal spells are control decks.
Yes.
Right? The deck that this reads to me kind of off the top of my head as going in is Azorius Control, mm-hmm. right? So what cards is this competing for in terms of slots, right? You're fighting against Seam Rip. You're fighting against Get Lost, and you're fighting against Parting Gust.
I do think this is better than Get Lost.
Really?
I think this is, Get Lost being able to also target enchantments and planeswalkers is important.
And things that aren't attacking or blocking.
Correct. I hate giving my opponent map tokens.
I agree.
And I will continue to dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, better, I think, is too strong. It is not better, but I think it can compete with. I think if you wanted to, especially with the existence of mono red aggro again, I actually don't think this card is that down. If you are going into a field of 50% mono red aggro where their favorite thing to do is turn sideways, I actually think this is quite up. And it's better than Get Lost in that instance because you don't give your opponent map tokens and you don't give them a way to refine their draws better. Obviously now, we don't have Monstrous Rages that are as much of a concern anymore, but still being allowed to, letting the aggressive red player refine their draws and not draw mountains and only draw playable cards is not good for a control player, I don't think. And so being able to deal with their game pieces and just clear off their board, if the mono red aggro player has no creatures, they don't win. And so I think this card is better than Get Lost in that instance.
Sure. I think in specifically the mono red matchup, I wholeheartedly agree.
But also, as we've mentioned, if Vivi is now going to turn into an aggressive Izzet deck, I think it's also good in that matchup into control. If things are going to turn sideways, this spell is going to be good. It's the same reason why, like, Ride's End, obviously Ride's End also was in the, like, Overlords Up the Beanstalk deck, so you were getting value for playing a bad spell like Ride's End. But when creatures, like, creatures turning sideways is good for this card.
When was, or rather, how often do you die to a Vivi turning sideways? Because in my experience...
But it's not the Vivi.
The Vivi just stays untapped.
But it's not the Vivi. There are other, like, again... Is it aggro precludes the fact that there are more than just Vivi trying to kill you?
No, I know, but that's the piece you need to remove the quickest.
Sure, sure. In that case, yes. But I would still be up on this removal spell.
Sure.
I am still up on it.
You have convinced me that it is better than I am giving it credit for. I think it's like a 2 of in the sideboard, maybe.
We'll revisit Stone Cold Unplayable later.
Yeah, look, we're not quite there. And look, I do forget that the, like, actual standard pool is reasonably small, right? So we are competing with not nearly as much high quality removal. Is Elspeth Smite still in the format? No, right?
Also, again, like, white removal, like, removal of every kind struggled and is struggling with rotation. And so, like, I am more up on this as a temporary, like, this is what the format could use right now.
As a patchwork fix.
Like, until better removal is printed.
Yep. All right.
Because I'm still so not... I don't want my opponent to have map tokens. If you give me map tokens, that's great, but I don't want to give you map tokens.
If this becomes a mainstay in the main board of any deck, I am going to be very sad. But I am willing to believe it could happen.
We'll check in.
Sudden Strike versus Venom. Let's see who comes out on top. It'll be Sudden Strike, but that's okay. Last but not least, I have a new category for you.
Okay.
It's lands. Because there are genuinely some very interesting lands in this format.
The Mayhem lands.
The Mayhem land singular, yes.
I thought there were multiple Mayhem lands.
There is only one of them has Mayhem, I believe.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. The first one we'll talk about. Seeing as we've already mentioned it, is Oscorp Industries. It is a land that says, this land enters tapped. When this land enters from a graveyard, you lose 2 life. You can tap it for blue, black, or red, and it has Mayhem. You may play this card from your graveyard. If you discard it at this turn, timing rules still apply.
Judge.
Yeah.
Can you explain timing rules still apply on a land?
Yes. So this means that you can still only play this land at sorcery speed.
Right.
So it's not... Because there are some effects that will say, you know, exile the top X cards of your library. You may cast them without paying its mana cost. And that requires you to cast them then and there. And in that instance, you can ignore timing restrictions. But so the key case that this is referring to is Madness. Right? Mm-hmm. With the way Madness works, when you discard a card, it goes briefly into exile and then it goes onto the stack, or rather the triggered ability goes onto the stack and then you can cast it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can cast sorceries at instant speed using Madness. You can't do that with Mayhem.
For Mayhem. Okay. And so this means, like, if you discard this during your main phase, you'd be able to, if you haven't played a land for a turn... And you discard the Oscorp Industries.
Well, I believe it's you can play it until end of turn. Yeah, you may play this card from your graveyard if you discarded it this turn. So it's more like if you discarded it until the end of the turn, you can play it.
Hmm.
But you can play it only when you would normally be able to.
So like during a main phase.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, this card just seems pretty good. The place I can see this card being interesting is actually Modern. Because I think it's pretty good with Faithless Looting in the Grixis Gorios deck. But this card is a blue-red land that sees play in a deck with Winter Night Stories and Fear of Missing Out. Right? Just a way to incidentally make your discard value a little bit higher is not going to be that bad. And it's probably only a 2 of. But, I don't know, casting a Fear of Missing Out on turn 3, discarding this and putting it into play tapped when you have, you know, so that you can... play your Vivi and your 1-drop on turn 4 seems entirely fine to me.
Okay.
And the better that discard gets, and there is a lot of discard synergy in this set, right? Mayhem is not just on the land. It's on a bunch of other stuff, and it's actually quite interesting. The backside of the Green Goblin gives all the cards you can cast in your graveyard like 2 mana cost reduction. There's a lot of really interesting kind of discard-focused graveyard synergy happening, and in the decks that care about that, this card will probably be fine. It's genuinely interesting.
Okay. All right.
All right. You're with me?
I'm following a few paces behind. I'm very... We haven't had... That's a lie. We do currently have bad 3-color lands.
It's true.
But 3-color still hasn't really taken off in the same way.
Nope.
So I'm curious to see what this does. Because Grixis is like a pretty powerful color combination.
Yeah. I mean, it has Kefka in it. This card's pretty good with Kefka.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Okay. What other lands you got?
I do have more lands. So let's talk about the actually good one now.
Hey everyone, this is Editing Kira from the future. For some reason, the video split into two different files and we lost about 20 to 30 seconds of video for some reason. So I'm just chiming in here to say that I managed to find the other half, but not the missing 30 seconds piece of footage. So this is my attempt to bridge the gap a little bit. So there's just going to be some images on the screen for a little bit, and then it's going to transition back to Maya and I having our usual little chat about the Spider-Man card. So thanks for your patience, and let's get back into it.
The actually good one is Multiversal Passage.
Sure.
It is a land. Mm-hmm. It says, as this land enters, choose a basic land type, then you may pay 2 life. If you don't, it enters tapped. This land is the chosen type.
Oh, it's a basic shock.
It's an Omni Shock.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a basic shock land.
Mm-hmm.
That's... Huh.
This card is insane. You thought Starting Town was good? Holy moly. I'm playing 4 of these in Pixie.
Wow.
This card's okay. Just pretty good.
Yeah. Actually is significantly better than Starting Town.
It is... Like, there are places where Starting Town will be better for sure. But there are so many games where you take 3 or 4 damage off Starting Town where you don't need to. And this can enter tapped and just as a color on turn 1 and it doesn't matter. This card's really cool.
Yeah. Obviously, as like, you know, the difference between this and Starting Town being once you've chosen a color, you're locked in.
Yes.
You cannot change the land type and you cannot generate different colors of mana later on.
Correct.
But even so, if this is just a 4 of in your deck, it's 4 of any color.
Yeah, it's just kind of an untapped Evolving Wilds, which is pretty good.
I suppose as well, this is a pretty decent, again, kind of like Band-Aid-y type solution until the rest of the shocks are printed.
Yeah, I think this card will go in most 2 and 3 color decks, right? Like, this is probably going in Demir. It's almost certainly going in Izzet. This is definitely going in all the 3-color nonsense bad decks I'm playing.
Yeah, makes Sunspine Lynx even better.
It really does. Sunspine Lynx stonks are so high right now. It's crazy.
Very high on Sunspine Lynx.
Shock Verge mana bases. Also, this card with Verges.
Oh, yeah. It turns Verges on.
Sure does.
That's nice.
It's pretty cool.
Okay.
I think this card's really good.
Okay.
I think this is my pick for most playable card in the set.
Probably. I think I'd agree with you there.
Yeah. Look, we're like bit of an easy pickings, but I think this card's insane.
I think it's pretty good. All right. I would agree.
All right. There's not actually that much to say about this card. It's just good.
It's good.
It will go everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And last but not least, and this card I am less sold on, but I am interested in.
Mm.
And this is Urban Retreat.
Mm-hmm.
It is a land. It says this land enters tapped. And it taps for green, white, or blue.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pay 2 and return a tapped creature you control to its owner's hand to put this card from your hand onto the battlefield. You activate it only as a sorcery.
Okay.
It's interesting 2-mana ramp that plays from your hand. It can sometimes rebuy an ETB effect. I'm not sure where this goes. I don't think there's currently a home for this card.
Yeah.
But playing lands out of sequence is powerful. And having it be a land so you don't need to be playing ramp spells to do it is powerful, right? This effect is kind of quite unique. I think it, the only other like thing that I can think of that does a similar thing is like Talon Gates of Madara. Madara. Yes. I don't know what deck would have to exist for this to see play. I expect it would exist in decks with kind of similar play patterns to the ones you're suggesting with Llanowar Elves and incidental like tapped creatures that generate value or something with an ETB effect that you really want, like an Arboreal Grazer.
Mm. Interesting.
This card is curious. I'm not sold. But I think there's some really interesting play here. There's some really interesting upside. There have been some ramp decks running around. Like there have been some Llanowar Elf anti-causal vestige, like put an Ugin into play style decks that are probably tier two and a half maybe.
Okay.
Who knows? I, for one, am curious.
Well, and this set is small enough that there's not a lot to choose from really, right?
Yeah. I think I would choose this card out of any set, though. I'm the kind of blind idealist who likes to think this card might actually see play.
Bant is tough right now.
Bant is really hard right
now. Colors are not good for Bant because we don't have Hallowed Fountain or Temple Garden.
No, we do not. But Band-Aid Shock might help.
Band-Aid Shock might be okay, but I'm not sure.
Yes. Again, in the same way that I don't think Osgood Corporation is going to actually see play in the Grixis deck, I think this is unlikely to see play in an actual Bant deck. I think it will either see play in like a white-blue tempo deck or a white-green creature-based deck that's looking to just incidentally get a bit more mana out.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm curious. I am interested to see how it goes. And those are the cards I wanted to talk about.
Interesting.
Yeah. Are you excited for Spider-Man?
Of course.
I genuinely am. I think the cards in this set look cool. I think the fact that it's a small set is good as well because it means that overall the availability of cards is going to be higher, right? When you're not fighting over like... When the number of cards that you can pull out of a box is smaller, the number of good cards you're going to pull out of that box when there are good cards is going to be higher. And there are a lot of cards out of this set that I thought were borderline worth talking about. And I ended up culling down significantly, which means that as Standard expands, I think we're going to see more and more cards from this set enter because the design space is really interesting. I think web slinging is a very powerful mechanic.
I hope not. But we don't know.
We truly do not. And I'm so ready for the card that is good out of this set to be something we haven't talked about.
Yes, it's always really fun when the thing that ends up being the best, we didn't touch on at all, either because it seemed too obvious. Like, I think we didn't talk about VV because there was, like, an understanding of, like, this card is good no matter what. There's no need for us to talk about how good this card is because it's redundant.
Yeah. This card is insane. It's not interesting to talk about in a predictions episode.
No, not when you predictably can say it's going to be good.
Yeah, there's a busted Is It Spells deck. There's a busted Is It Spells card in this set that's at Mythic.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Surprise?
It feels very much like if we traveled back in time and we were like, let's spend 20 minutes talking about how good Shieldred's going to be, it would be like of course.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No kidding.
That's all that we have for you today. We look forward to seeing you again next week. New episodes air on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. You can keep track of all of our releases at RaiseMTG on both Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find me at Kira Bobira and Maya at MayaMTG. And a huge thank you to the Hen House Recording Studios in Brunswick for their studio space.
And remember, until next week, sometimes one decisive blow is all that you need to turn around a fight.